Today on CyberWork, my guest is Alex Amirian of Stingel Photos. What's Stingel Photos? It's an end-to-end encrypted open source gallery and sync app created by a professional cryptographer and able to prevent theft by breach. How does it work? And how did Alex come by his obsession for cryptography? Tune in and find out today on CyberWork. Welcome to this week's episode of the CyberWork with InfoSec podcast. Each week, we talk with a different industry thought leader about cybersecurity trends, the way those trends affect the work of InfoSec professionals, and offer tips for breaking in or moving up the ladder in the cybersecurity industry. Alex Amirian is a software developer with over 18 years of experience, specializing in cybersecurity and cryptography. From early school years, he was obsessed with computers and technology in general. Alex is the creator of popular Safe Camera app, which was the predecessor of Stingel Photos. So Alex's story came to me in regards to his work with Stingel Photos, which is a photo sharing app. And its connection to cryptography and encryption. And it seemed like a very good tie-in in terms of thinking about the way images, videos, and just information in general is being sent through the internet in comparatively unsafe or intentionally unprotected ways. And so I want to sort of talk with Alex about some of the ways forward here. So, Alex, thank you for joining me today and welcome to CyberWork.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me. I'm really glad to be your guest today.
My pleasure as well. So we like to start out every episode by getting the story of our guest cybersecurity journey in their own words. And it said in your bio that you've been interested in computers and tech from your early school years. What was the original draw to that? And also, what was the draw? You've become kind of an authority on cryptography and encryption. Like, how did one go to the other? Was it just a natural progression?
So my journey actually started when I was 3 years old, and my dad was a programmer and developer back then. Mm-hmm. And I was really obsessed with computers, and back then it was 386, mm-hmm. this kind of stuff.
Sure,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And after that, in school, I started using computers and was really obsessed with them. And in the sixth grade in the school, I got my first personal PC, and then I just went all in and never talked to anybody, never went to play with kids, this kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And
and when I was in the high school, we have with friends, we started doing some hacking, and it was kind of fun for us. We just were playing. And until we got into the hands of law enforcement.
Yeah.
And they just called us and said, you're very smart kids. We want you to put on the right track. These laws are just for cybercrime. These laws are just passed in our country. So just be careful. You're just really smart kids. We want you not to get into any trouble in the future. Yeah, and so after that, the hacking became security, mm-hmm. and it remained like that. And this was my main field of interest from the beginning and until now.
Yeah, we've had a couple of guests who have run afoul of law enforcement early on like that. Can you talk about that? Was that ever a consideration? Was the sort of stern warning enough to make you say, yeah, I want to stay on the side of the law, or did you get a sense of what other sort of paths were available to you at the time?
Actually, we were just not doing anything malicious. So it was kind of malicious, but we were doing it not for profit, not for
fun,
any. Yeah, just for fun, just to see if we can accomplish it or not, just to mm-hmm. prove to ourselves. So there was no point in continuing that in that direction. So, And actually it's the same. So if you want to do security, you have to know all the hacking techniques so you can protect yourself from that. And also while developing applications, you have to know all possible hacking techniques. And so you can do the appropriate stuff to mitigate them in the first place.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm always amazed when we have articles on our site kind about how to destroy a server and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, yeah, you have to know that so that you know that it doesn't happen to you. So I want to know, we were talking about encryption and cryptography. What precipitated your move from software engineer to starting your own company, Stingle Photos? Like, what skills did you take from your previous job into starting your own company? And what was the sort of, were you dissatisfied with just being a software engineer? Was this another interest that budded later on?
So actually, let me tell you the backstory of Stingle Photos, like why and how this idea came. So actually, at some point, I started like de-Googling my life and moving away from all kind of Google services. And I found a really good alternative for Gmail, for email, for notes, for search. But when I came to find some good, like privacy respecting secure alternatives to Google Photos, I found nothing. This was like aha moment for me, like why there is no. So there are some solutions that are really complicated and they're not practical even for a developer like me, like hosting your own server and using Nextcloud, sure. This kind of stuff. But also this is also not really secure, because now instead of Google, you're trusting your cloud provider where you bought your server, right?
There you go.
And other than that, there are some like practical and very convenient solutions, which are practically the same as Google. So they are not encrypted and the provider gets all of your photos and videos in the clear. It's like Amazon Photos, Apple iCloud, some KeepSafe, I don't know, these kind of apps. And they're all practically the same, so there's no point of switching. So then I decided why I have the skills and I have the motivation. And also, like for your question about what kind of skills I took from my experience. So I was a CTO in my last company, and I took like my development skills, my cryptography, security skills, and also management skills, which are helping a lot right now.
Yeah. That's a really good leads into my next question here. Can you give any advice for listeners who might be about to take the plunge and create their own business? What skills did you take from engineering that are helping you in this management sphere? And if you had any pitfalls in creating your own business, can you talk about like how you overcame them or what to avoid?
Sure. So my first advice will be, if someone is willing to start their own business, just find a good idea, find something that is needed. So like find a gap in some industry where you can see that people have this pain, have this need. And also it can be like in my case. So it can come from your own experience, right? You're trying to find something. Yeah, you're trying to find something and there is nothing that satisfies you. So this is probably the place where to start, because you can think about it like this. So if you have this problem, if you have this need, there are probably several million people who have the same need and problem like you. So you can start right there. Other than that, be persistent, be motivated, just have fun. maybe it will not go well at the first. Also, you have to learn a lot of like business related stuff, like for raising money, for pitching your product. Yeah. This is not something you're familiar with if you're a developer. And at the end, the last advice will be like, just hire the right person. So like do a lot of interviews, like spend a lot of time on interviews and selecting right people, because at the beginning, it's really crucial to have right people next to you. And especially it's about co-founders if you have one.
Yeah. Now, so let's sort of dig into Stingle Photos and what differentiates it. You describe it in your bio as a secure end-to-end encrypted gallery and sync app. So can you tell me how it works specifically and how it differs from the photo apps that you mentioned, Google Photos and iPhoto and all that kind of stuff? What did you do differently?
So Stingle Photos is, as you said, it's end-to-end encrypted, open source, gallery, and sync app. So let me explain what is end-to-end encryption. So usually all of these services, they're encrypting your data in transit, so nobody in between can intercept it. But at the other end is their servers, and they're receiving it in the clear. And that's the problem. So the provider has your data. End-to-end encryption means that it's encrypted from one end to the second end, but on both ends are actually you. So you encrypt that. So all the encryption occurs, in case of Stingle Photos, all the encryption occurs on your device with the keys that only you have and nobody else. And we just provide a service for storing your data.
Right.
And syncing it between your devices, but we have no visibility on the data itself whatsoever. So you have the keys, only you control your keys, and nobody else. So this effectively gives the advantage of the nice feature of Stingle Photos is that, for example, we see a lot of different data leaks all the time, right?
Oh, yeah.
So the last one was T-Mobile, if you know that they leaked a lot of data. And if you think about it, these large companies have like billions of dollars in cash, and they're still failing to protect their user data.
Yeah,
and exactly. You can think of like, if I get large enough, I will be hacked too, maybe one day, right? So like, I was thinking about this problem a lot. And what's the solution? So solution is not to keep on your servers, on your cloud infrastructure, anything that you can't afford to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple.
So
this is the whole idea behind Stingle Photos, and it was like designed and developed with this mindset from the day one. And it's like this right now. So if somebody would hack the servers and steal all the databases, files, scripts, everything from there, they will get like plain nothing out of it, because we don't have access, and so does everybody else.
So the way it's working, if I'm imagining it in my head, is like if you had like a storage locker and someone just brought in an empty black box that you can't get into, and they put it in your storage locker, and you're like, well, we're storing it, but I have no idea what's in there, and I have no way to look into there. So that's really interesting. So
yeah,
like you say, if you do get hacked, then they're just getting a mess of nothing. So that's really interesting. So we mentioned some of the other photo sharing on personal and professional level. It's beyond widespread at this point. It's ubiquitous. And we all sort of whistle past the graveyard when we think about the sites that we post things on, whether social media, Facebook, Instagram, or photos, say, you know, sharing sites or storage sites like Google Photos or what have you. But, you know, these sites are sort of unabashedly porous in their approach to safety and privacy. So, I think it's working out for you in that you're providing something that they aren't. But do you foresee your sort of unusual method of end-to-end encryption ever taking off with these other companies? Or is this something that you think that they really don't want to lose that sort of access to your data?
So actually, it comes from their business model.
Mm-hmm.
So they will not, like Google and Facebook particularly, they will not opt in for this kind of stuff, because they want your data. So you are using Google and Gmail and all the Google services for free, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're using the Facebook for free. Are you paying monthly fee for Facebook? No. So, but it's expensive, right? To keep all this infrastructure, and they need to generate money. So they generate money from advertising, and for advertising is for the first thing that you need is to know the people that you have, so you can do more targeted advertising. And these companies are really like data hungry. So they want as much data as possible to serve you as relevant ads as possible. And more relevant the ad, the more money they get, because advertisers are more likely to go and advertise on their platforms. I don't see in foreseeable future that they're gonna change something. Or the other possibility is, for example, if the laws change and they require these companies to do end-to-end encryption. But this is not this is unlikely too, because everything is going in the opposite direction actually. So lots of countries are trying to pass laws to incorporate backdoors in the encryption. So they can view the data, because they don't like that people can communicate secretly, and they don't have any visibility over that. Yeah. So yeah, so I think this is a place for other companies like ours to take back privacy of users. So if you don't want to grant all your data to these large companies, you
now is your service just a black box storage, or do you have like sort of sharing of images between single users? Is there any sort of community aspect to it, or is it really sort of set up like an online safe deposit box for your images?
We have sharing, and sharing is also of course protected with end-to-end encryption, so only you and the sharee can see the photos and videos that you share. And actually, so single photos is on the outside, on the interface, is we would try to make it as much like ordinary gallery app as you always used to. So the switching is really easy. So when you open it for the first time, like you said, like what, like this is a like ordinary gallery, and we like also went into great lengths with of effort to make it really fast, so all this kind of this encryption decryption is not getting in your way. You just use it as your normal gallery app. You just take some photos, it goes there, and it's automatically encrypted. You don't even know, and it's backing up or syncing through your devices the encrypted data, and you don't feel it again. But all the time you're protected with this kind of security.
Yeah, it's just humming in the background. So
yeah, and by the way, one more thing: we have a professional academic cryptographer in our team, which is a really really famous guy. He developed a Lilantis protocol for Zcoin, and he's a like world famous cryptographer, and he's on our team, and he helped a lot during the development part at the first, when we just designing the crypto system, and he's with us. So
yeah, and you have that background as well. Are you still sort of working in that aspect of the company, or have you sort of transitioned into sort of ownership management?
I'm working. I'm actively developing it beside the organizational and business part. But I really enjoy it, and I'm not planning to give it up.
Right. Yeah. So, can you talk about your crypto method at all? I mean, obviously, I don't want to give away anything, but like, like you say, you've got one of the best dudes in the world. Like, what's the what's so exciting about it to you?
You mean the technology part?
The level of safety of the encryption.
First of all, everything is open. We're not hiding anything. Everything is open source, and on our website, on the security page, you can read like really deep explanation on how everything works. Because in this field, you have to be like really open, really like all code is open source, so everybody can check, and there's nothing to hide. So we're using actually well-established and well-vetted and industry-standard Libsodium crypto library, which is the backbone of Stingle Photos, and it uses ChaCha20, Curve 25519, ECC crypto, so this kind of stuff, which is really fast and really really secure. So
nice. Speaking in terms of just the way that images and such are shared on the internet, and there's certainly a lot of talk about doctored and online photos and video deep fakes are becoming more prevalent, and just the general sort of ownership or the originality of images gets harder and harder to track. Is this type of end-to-end sharing encryption a possible check against stolen and modified photos going viral and spreading disinformation with them?
I think no, these mm-hmm. things are not connected. Okay. So actually, like detecting deep fakes is more of a job of AI.
Yeah,
I think it's not about encryption. And actually, I had an idea a few years ago to make a system like the opposite system, like system for verified photos on the social media, so you right. can prove that this photo is really mine and I'm not fake. Yeah, and it will require some kind of a digital signature embedded in the photos. But the thing is, the providers, like the websites, have to support this technology to be able to verify the signature and show the badge, for example, this kind of stuff. Yeah, so maybe it's something I will develop in the future.
Okay, that's yeah. a whole other course. Okay.
Yeah, but for detecting deep fakes, I think it's another topic.
Not going to work. Yeah. So, what sorts of do you what's the average single photo client? What do you have, like, people with like large, like photographers with large collections? Like, what sorts of people are using and enjoying your service?
Actually, right now, a majority of our users, as far as we know, because we don't collect any information, yeah, we don't have any trackers, we don't mm-hmm. have any advertisements in the in the app. Just we have a Telegram group, like a fan group of mm-hmm. single users. That's why I know some people out of there. So I think the majority of them are just techies who are aware of these privacy problems, right. these security problems, and they're just like me. We're seeking for some alternatives, and they finally found single photos, and they're really happy with that. And yeah, and our user base is quite growing right now. We have 12,000 users right now.
Cool. Okay.
So
And since you're not, I'm assuming there's a monthly fee. Since you're not, you know, mining content and things like that, you're making your revenue sort of more one to one in the sense of like we store this and then, you know, we collect the money from you.
Yeah, it's free and open source, and as I said, and with each account you get 1 gigabyte of free cloud storage.
Gotcha.
And after that, you can buy more storage with monthly or yearly subscription fees.
There you go.
And actually, you can use the app locally. You can turn off backup and use it locally as much as you like.
Gotcha.
So, but if you want like backup and sync functionality, you like need some cloud storage. Extra. So this is the only thing that we sell, actually.
Okay, perfect. Mm-hmm. So I want to sort of rotate over to the work of cryptography. This is a CyberWork podcast. So, you know, obviously your company is based around photo storage, but it seems like encryption and cryptography are a big source of excitement for you. So for our listeners who are sort of trying to get into cybersecurity and looking for their particular job track, can you tell us about the day-to-day work of being a cryptographer? Like, what types of skill sets are crucial to do this kind of work, and what sorts of personalities, learning backgrounds, or training tend to do well with the work of cryptography?
I think the personality, like, it's you should have more like learning, and like you have to be a person who like digging and learning new stuff, just having fun out of it. And so cryptography and security in general is very interesting field, and it's also like growing and developing really fast. So it's a lot of news every day, a lot of things happening, and it's really interesting place to be right now. And because it became so much larger of a problem for the whole industry right now, because everybody's getting hacked. There's a ransomware groups that are infiltrating large enterprises and demanding large ransoms. It's become a big thing right now, and there's a lot of potential if you want to start right now. There's lots of room to grow, and lots of like this kind of secure end-to-end encrypted and privacy respecting applications that have to be created, because they're not much right now, and large companies are taking over all the space right now. We have to compete in some way.
if our listeners are hearing this and saying that sounds great, and I'm glad it's a growing field and I want to get involved in it, what would you recommend are some concrete steps that they could start tonight that would put their foot on the path to doing this type of work? Like, what type of study, YouTube videos, online stuff, reading? Like, where do you sort of get that first spark?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And if you want to start and just to have a feeling that is this for you or not, you can just probably watch cryptography 101 videos on YouTube, mm-hmm. and just get to know what is symmetric encryption, what is asymmetric encryption, what is hashing, this kind of stuff. And then I can suggest really fun stuff to do. You can read how the RSA works. on Wikipedia, for example, mm-hmm. and then you can take pen and pencil and choose very small keys, like I don't know, two-digit, one-digit keys, which are really not secure, not considered secure, but it's practical for you to calculate by hand. And yes. You, with your friend, you can sit down and choose your private and public keys and exchange public keys and then start talking with each other with the public key cryptography, which is really fun. Right. So nobody in between can understand what you are talking.
Amazing.
But you both, yes, you can decrypt what the other person is saying. It's really cool.
I love that. Yeah, that makes sort of a game of it, and also it's becomes kind of a secret society, and it also kind of builds a sort of shared communication.
Yeah, it's actually my advice is it always has to be a game. Like mm-hmm. you have to have fun, and like it should be like a lot of pleasure for you to do this kind of stuff. Not mm-hmm. Like not think of it about like this is a really serious job I'm going to do right now.
Yeah.
No, this is really fun. Like learning and doing this stuff is actually fun. And then you will like progress and make progress when you think of it like this.
Can you think of a moment when you were studying and learning about cryptography where you felt like your skills really leveling up, where you learned a certain thing or you learned a certain technique and you said, oh, wow, that really like changes the entire game? Or is it just this sort of constant evolution where you just get like slightly better every day?
It's kind of like you get a lot of information at the beginning and then it's like levels out. So mm-hmm. At first it's like, yeah, it's cool. That's really cool. It's game changing for me. Yeah, everything is new. But mm-hmm. then after that, you get more sense of this, more sense of that. You learn how to do things right. So there's also it's important not to imply cryptography and encryption algorithms, but also do them right. So your security is like a chain and it's as secure as your weakest link in the chain. So if you do a lot of good crypto, a lot of good algorithms, etc., large keys, but at the end you do something dumb in the meantime, and right. you leak all the keys, for example, there is no uh-huh. point in the previous job. So
you have to be
very careful.
Very good point. Now, what types of companies, like at what level, you said the job market for cryptographers is growing and growing end to end and stuff like end over end. But like what types of companies hire cryptographers? Is it just sort of these sort of encryption storage companies? Is it something like where would you start looking for a job like this once you start sort of developing your skills?
For cryptographers, I think any company that is developing something from scratch, I would say, and not using like ready-made packages.
Right.
When so it's not about just cryptographer. So there is also a notion that like you have to you take the cryptographic primitives and you assemble them in the right way so it will be secure at the end. So it's not about like writing and inventing your own crypto and cryptographic algorithms. And by the way, I'm not an academic cryptographer, so mm-hmm. I'm not inventing new algorithms. I just know how to create a good crypto system. So using the well-established primitives, like AES-256, like RSA. These are the primitives, and combine them into the crypto system that is secure at the end. So these kind of specialists are like needed everywhere, actually, and not only about cryptography, like in security in general. So there are like security guys in the cloud infrastructure, on the physical like offices and enterprises. So people need security guys everywhere.
Yeah. So this, it's a little bit more of a team effort then. It's not just a person in a room making crypto. Like you need to have your sort of security team there to sort of help you implement it. And like you said, it's not a solo activity. Is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Mm-hmm. Okay. So looking to the future, what are the next steps in the cryptography arms race? Because it seems like every new level of encryption complexity or deliberate asymmetry will somehow get plowed through by armies of massive processors doing lightning quick calculations. Like, do you see any tech or processes on the horizon that are really going to change the game in terms of encrypted materials? Or is it just constantly like we create something more complex and then it gets decrypted, and then we create something more complex and gets decrypted?
So let me tell you a little bit on which stage we are and where everything is going. So right now we have a really solid cryptography, and there are no computers in the world that can crack it.
Okay.
So the thing is, for example, if you use 256 bit key, you always see that there everywhere. So it's 256 mm-hmm. bit encryption, this kind of stuff. And what it actually means, it means that the key is it consists of 256 bits, right? So each mm-hmm. bit is a one or zero, and you might think that it's not a lot, but this is a 2 to the 256, to the power of 256. This is enormous number.
Like, yes.
This is actually, if you want to like imagine, this number is greater than the number of atoms in the universe.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Okay. You can't brute force this number. So you can't possibly try all combinations. So what? How the algorithms are getting like hacked in the meantime? Because you know that there are some old algorithms that were hacked. Mm-hmm. You just find some clever way to shortcut it, so you don't try all 256 bits of combinations. You just find some shortcut to make your work a lot easier. Okay. And there is like cryptography started a long time ago, and now we have these algorithms that we have now. They're the product of this many years of development and trial and error, and our knowledge in mathematics, in crypto analysis, and they're really, really secure. So right now we don't have anything to worry about. So what about the future? So in the future, we're like anticipating that quantum computing will be more prevalent. And so right now it's like a toy thing. It's not dangerous at all. Yep. But in the 10, 15, 20 years, maybe they will become dangerous, and some algorithms will be no more like relevant anymore. So they will be not considered secure. But for right now, cryptographers are already like inventing new algorithms, and which are quantum proof. So we know what is quantum computing, and we know what mm-hmm. to expect from that. And we now already developed algorithms that are quantum proof. And we also have a lot of time to move our industry away from the older and vulnerable algorithms.
Gotcha. So this is still ultimately going to come down to sort of errors of programming. You know, I hate to say human error, but with the encryption being as sort of bulletproof as it is, it's ultimately going to come down to, like you said, sort of unforced errors and things like that. And that's where breaches still come from.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's why we think that open source is the way to go. So not only your employees are looking at the code, but the whole world is looking at the code, and you give the opportunity for everybody to audit it and find any bugs maybe that will be, that will hurt you in the future.
So there's not really, even for people who want to crack the algorithm or the encryption, like having an open source, like that doesn't necessarily help them in terms of being able to crack it. It's
No, absolutely not. So the write encryption is not security through obscurity.
Right.
So you're not hiding your algorithm. So it, you are actually hiding your keys. And keys have the users, which are protected for them, protected with their password. And in case of single photos, it's really important for you to choose a good password, at least 8 or 9 characters long. Yep. So your keys will be protected. Yeah. And other than that, yeah. This is a thing.
All right. So as we wrap up today, can you tell me some upcoming projects you're working on with Stingle Photos or elsewhere that you're excited to share with our listeners?
Absolutely. So right now we're releasing our iOS version of the app. So before that, we had only Android version. And the iOS version is public beta right now, so users can find it if you want to be the first to test it and play with it. You can find on our Telegram channel. It's t.me/stingle_photos. So soon we will release the iOS version, and also we are planning to have desktop and web versions of the applications. And after that, so for the future plans, we're also going to expand to Stingle Drive. So we also have the same security. Our users will have same security for storing files and documents. And also we'll build an online document editor on top of that. So you will be able to secure your files and documents with that. So
can you give that, just so our listeners heard it for sure, can you give us where to go if they want to know more about Stingle Photos and yourself? What's the online, what's the URL?
So the URL is stingle.org. So it's STINGLE.org. Mm-hmm. And the Telegram channel, when you can get the updates and participate, is t.me/stingle_photos. Yeah, awesome. And that's all. Yeah,
great, Alex. Thank you so much we'll for joining me today. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you very much. Was a lot of fun too.
All right. And as always, thank you, everyone who is listening at home, listening at work, or listening at work from home. New episodes of the CyberWork podcast are available every Monday at 1 p.m. Central, both on video at our YouTube page and on audio wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. Also, I'm excited to announce that our InfoSec skills platform will be releasing a new challenge every month with 3 hands-on labs to put your cyber skills to the test. In September, you'll start in our Security Plus lab, exploring the ins and outs of secure and insecure protocols. Level 2, move on to explore secure coding errors commonly found in JavaScript. If you make it that far, it's level 3, boss round, deploying advanced techniques leveraged by Sandworm APT to compromise, pivot from, and destroy a server. Complete all 3 challenges, download your certificate of completion, upload it to LinkedIn, and tag InfoSec for your chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card, an InfoSec hoodie, and a 1-year subscription to InfoSec Skills so you can keep on learning. Just go to InfoSecInstitute.com/challenge and show us what you can do. Thank you once again to Alex Amirian, and thank you all so much for watching and listening. We will speak to you next week. How about some free cybersecurity training resources for you and your team? Just go to InfoSecInstitute.com/free to get ebooks, training guides, and more than 100 cybersecurity training courses. All free for CyberWork listeners. Go to InfoSecInstitute.com/free and start learning crucial new skills today.